Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, how y'all doing out there this morning? Peace and love to you. Assalamu alaikum, shalom. Yeah, peace be unto you. Yeah, hope all is well. Beginning of the week, we'll start this thing off right here on the morning trip, Suleiman Bey, Blog Talk Radio. And we got a broad array of topics today that we're about to get into as we usually do. You know, we get into it, get deep into it, and do it. So I've just been up studying and researching, so I'm going to bring a lot of stuff to y'all today. So we're going to do a bunch of reading today, get ready. We're at Sunday school, y'all. Yeah, that's where we at. We're in Sunday school. So we're going to go up some, do a little reading, read the Willie Lynch today. And we're going to get into the Racial Integrity Act of 1924. And show you some deep readings today, some real mind-blowing, mind-opening articles. And then read the prophecies and hadiths of Noble Drew Ali. So you can see what came in our midst. Yahushua come again. Hope y'all are right out there. Again, thank y'all for tuning in. You on Blog Talk Radio, the Morning Drip with Suleiman Bey. Get to check us out on our forums, our websites. We have legalempowermentgroup101.com. That's legalempowermentgroup101.com. And we have supernaturalgalleries.com for the NFTs and your coins, your tokens, for the S-Gala coin and the Supercoin, the S-Gala token and the Supercoin. And don't forget to go over to queenkitty.net for your feminine hygiene products. That's queenkitty.net and queenkitty at Instagram. And don't forget to also check us out at Instagram at Legal Empowerment Group. So get your e-books, do-it-yourself kits and stuff like that. So check us out there as well. For the donations, to take finance to raise the nation, for your donations, helping Earth Acquire Light Through Humanity. It's our nonprofit forum, and it's 501c3, totally tax deductible for your donations. So use the website for that is health.info. That's health/H-E-A-L-T-H.info. You got to put the slashes in between the word that you spell the word health, as in healthcare, health.info. All right, so check us out there, man, and be a blessing, man. Be a blessing to someone so someone else could be a blessing to somebody else. That's how it goes, you know. Nobody got to see what you're doing. You could be anonymous with it, too. You don't have to donate or somebody know. But we will receipt you. We will be able to use that for your tax benefits. So that's some things that most of us don't know nothing about and how to do. We've got to learn how to start writing off stuff and using your business to write off a lot of those expenses that you're spending for business. Your household business, that is, huh? Especially if you're a consumer, everything you buy, you want it to be a household good. So, let me get to that. So, let's go over here today. I'm just going here and pull up some, first I'm going to start, I'm going to read the fall and creation, the creation and fall of man from the Moorish Quran. Come on. All right. That's the first thing that I'm going to do this morning. I'm going to read from the Holy Quran, Circle 7. Okay. It says, before I do that, first let me go back, but I would be remiss without doing that. I'm going to go back and read Act 6 of our Divine Constitution and Bylaws of Moorish America. Okay? So I want y'all to be aware of this. This is our bylaws, and this is for your edification. With us, all members must proclaim their nationality, and we are teaching our people their nationality and their divine creed, that they may know that they are a part and a partial of this said government. and know that they are not Negroes, colored folks, black people, or Ethiopians, because these names were given to slaves by slaveholders in 1779 and lasted until 1865 during the time of slavery. But this is a new era of time now, and all men now must proclaim their free national name to be recognized by the government in which they live and the nations of the earth. This is the reason why Allah, the great God of the universe, ordained Noble Drew Ali, the prophet, to redeem his people from their sinful ways. The Moorish Americans are the descendants of the ancient Moabites, whom inhabited the northwestern and southwestern shores of Africa. Man, y'all better wake up, man. Yahushua came. What y'all waiting on? Because that's true. He dropped on us for all of y'all. And now everybody's using that. See, Yahushua was born again in 1886. Came in the form of Noble Drew Ali. Everybody using that now. The Savior, the Avatar. All his teachings are being used. People bawling out right now off of his teachings. You know, all praises to Allah. You know, we give honor to me, honor to Noble Drew Ali, Timothy Drew. He was born just like us. That's why I came here and broke the Roman seal. So that's a jewel. He said, with us, all members must proclaim their nationality. We are teaching our people their nationality and their divine creed. See, why are we teaching our people their nationality and their divine creed? Because you was considered three-fifths of a man in the Constitution. See, so three-fifths mean you was missing two-fifths or something. So you see, so then this means all men must be consist of five-fifths. So what was you missing? So the two pieces which you was missing is what the prophet brought to us. That's how you know Yahushua came again. You're looking for Jesus to come, but Yahushua already came, see? See, because you didn't get the right name. The name is in the power is in the name. See, they always teach you that, but they didn't give you the name, see? They didn't give you the name. They gave you a name. They didn't give you, teach you about Yahushua. So with us, all members must proclaim their nationality. We are teaching our people their nationality and their divine creed. That's what we're stripped from you. Okay? That's what we're stripped from you. Denationalizing your divine creed. What is your divine creed? That's what they call religion today, your way of your forefathers and foremothers. See, we've got following an alien religion, an alien culture, all this black culture, black pride, black power, black lives matter. None of it does. It's all corporate BS, and it's all about a dollar. That's what it's all. It's all about conquer. It's all about capitalism. That's what it's about. So if you don't get an understanding of that and get a grip of that, and you just go stay getting peed on, shitted on, and with all the doors closed on you, just like you've been doing, because that's what people do to mutts. Yeah, that's what people do to curs. People don't breed curs. Who out there breeding curs? Give me a call if you out there breeding curs, because the people don't buy bloodline like that. People buying bloodline, solid pedigree. You feel me? Know what your roots is. Everybody got a bloodline and a pedigree, a nationality where they come from. It never could change. It can't be sold, borrowed, none of that. You are who you are. A German shepherd in any state, any country, anywhere in the world is a German shepherd. Who are you? You on the Morning Drip, Blog Talk Radio with Suleiman Bey. Don't forget to tap into us at LegalEmpowerMentGroup101.com for more information, and go and check us out at Instagram at Legal Empowerment Group too. Do it yourself, kids. So that part about that. So he taught us. So on he goes and says, we are teaching our people their nationality and their divine creed, that they may know that they are a part and a partial of this said government, and know that they are not Negroes, colored folks, black people, or Ethiopians, because these names were given to slaves by slaveholders in 1779. And lasted until 1865 during the time of slavery. It's a flag running around. We call it Old Glory. They call it something else Old Glory. Then it's a civil. It's red and white. Red with a white canton with a green cedar pine tree. And you'll see a lot of the Moors have that up. And you will see that this flag is of your ancestors and of your ancestral estate, of a part of which you're right at home. See, why George Washington was cutting down a cherry tree, you didn't know what the cherry tree was symbolic of. You didn't know that the cherry tree was you getting chopped off, and they were chopping off your history. They were chopping off the root, their ties to you. It was keeping them bound. bound by contract. See, they were talking about they receiving off the contract so they could start dealing unjustly with the Moors. So that's why you find yourself under the tax of Negro, Blacks, and Colors now, Ethiopians, so all these tags that they gave us now. It's no longer you are who you are. So once that's why he said these names were given to slaves by slaveholders in 1779 and lasted to 1865. Yes, because 1865 is where they so-called say they freed the slaves or the 13th Amendment. No slavery or involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime. But if that's the case, if that's the case and you was free and the institution of slavery was abolished, then all the tags was abolished. So the name Negro, Black, Colored, everything that you was not, you don't get master and calling all those names was gone. So then the question was, okay, who am I? And I need to revert back to myself. But the thing is, that historical base had been taken from you. See, during the process. So during the process, all that type of historical base had been taken from you. That's the stuff that you got to you have to be conditioned back in your mind. You know, your mind has to get access to these things for it to wake up, you know, for them atoms to start buzzing. So that's what this is. This is a new era of time now, and all men now must proclaim their free national name to be recognized by the government in which they live, by your own government, by the Moors, so they know, okay, that's the Moor here at home. He proclaimed, and the nations of the earth. See, you think, we keep thinking that we're supposed to have an allegiance to an alien, to an alien nation, an alien people, the alien force. No, you're supposed to have an allegiance and alliance to yourself and kind first. Then you extend that love for yourself and kind out to humanity. See, we the civilizers. See, we the civilizers. See, and while we in darkness and being against each other, we have high respect for people that's doing us totally bad for centuries. So we have a lot of respect, and you know we treat them the way we supposed to try to treat ourselves. You know, we walk into a room with them and yes, sir, yes, master, yes, no, ma'am, yes, sir. We talk to each other. Oh, nigga, you feel me? Oh, B, call her out her name. Yeah, but soon as them folks walk in the door, you turn into a house Negro. Quick with your attitude. I've seen that a lot. In different parts of the country are different. Different demographics of the country have broke down different in the way that they deal with the European and their disposition towards them. And then, like in the southern region, they're more hospitable to the Europeans. On the West Coast, then they're totally different. The nations, the tribes are different because you see down here, the tribes was more oppressed down here. This is where they have their foothold, in the South. That's where they have their foothold. That's the best they took over the Moorish dominion. So you got the 13 states over there where they crushing at, you know. So all the rebels was running outside of this, with outside of this striking, and, you know, they trying to protect this. So you got to remember that. So that spirit, you can see it in the different demographics when you traveled around the country from the East Coast to the West Coast, from the North to the South, how the different in the people was. Even when I did time, the people are different from different sides as far as how they deal with the European. You could tell the difference in the tribalism and the warriorism and, like, what people went through. Like I said, it don't mean that no people are no more or less of a warrior because people are just as much warriors, but it's different. When my great-grandmama came to California in the 80s, she had been an ex-slave. She was scared to death of Europeans. She was 102. But us, when we was in California, you know, we talked to them all kind of way, extra mannish. Yeah, we dealt with them people extra mannish out there, bully on them. My great-grandma was scared to death. She was saying, child, she'd tell my mama, child, oh, Lord. So my mom would go bad on people at grocery stores and everything. She like, child, she was scared to death. And we like, two mama, we like, mama, that shit over with. We own shit. But see, she was raised in the South. So when I did time in the feds and I traveled around and I looked and I could tell the difference. Like, it's different. In the South, they're more respectful. Oh, man, dudes talk to you bad. Man, oh, talk to you all like you old nigga, woo, woo, woo. As soon as them folks walk in the door, yes, ma'am, yes, sir.
hey, Mr. Wutu, come go do something. Oh, yes, sir, about that. Pull up the pants, start walking. You need me to help you? Ooh, man, but treat you and talk to you bad. I just think the difference of it. Versus you have somebody from the East or West, the East Coast boys be more sophisticated, like on top of the game with constitutional UCC, and then the West Coast dudes be on more guerrilla Black Panther. So it was different stuff, but everybody be on tribalism, but it's just the condition, because all our people were compressed into these colonies down here and getting our ass kicked, which is more in the spirit. Like I said, it ain't just, I ain't speaking just about some people, my family included. My family just stayed in the South. My family just stayed in the South. They are different from my family that moved and spread out. It's just because of what they was under. And that's for protection. You know, you got to protect yourself. So anyway, but this is a new era time now, and all men now must proclaim their free national name to be recognized by the government in which they live and the nations of the earth. That's why you put it on notice. That's why you serve your people, let your people, you know, hey, folks, I'm home, Kim folks. Yeah, I'm wide awake. You feel me? Be a part of the movement. I'm wide awake. I'm here to work and help. You feel me? That's your extension. You gotta put that out there, and then you put the world on notice and let them know I'm not who you say I am. I am who I am. Yeah, that's what Allah told Moses, to tell him, who to say I am? He can't party talk, say I am who I am. Hey, yeah, my works tell who I am, man. Yeah, I am who I am, man. So you got to put the world on notice. Serve them the news with your notices, with your briefs, you know? Yeah, you got to put them on notice. You ain't waiting for no, need no response for them. You want to put them on notice. This is who I am. And double stamp it. Yeah, dot the I, cross the T, all the way around. All right? This is the reason why Allah, the great God of the universe, ordained the noble Drew Ali, the prophet, to redeem his people from their sinful ways. The Moorish Americans are the descendants of the ancient Moabites, whom inhabited the northwestern and southwestern shores of Africa. Now, for all those who might be new and don't know, the northwestern and southwestern shores of Africa is right here. This is northwestern and southwestern Africa. If you didn't know, now you know, baby. That's what this is, see? They put the name and call Africa. But see, this continent, we named it with one landmass. See, it has a northern part, a southern part, a eastern part, a western part. It has a northwestern part, a southwestern part. It has a northeastern part and a southeastern part. See, Ham, old man Ham, and his children, they separated in the rural. Mm-hmm. So fruitful, they had to go and multiply. They had to go out and spread up the continent. Mm-hmm. So you're in the Hamathite side over here, and this is northwestern and southwestern. When you get over here into the northern hemisphere, when you get over here into Canada, Alaska, North America, Central Mexico, Central America, the adjoining islands, Cuba, San Domingo, South America, that's northwestern, southwest America. You feel me? Southwest, north, northwest, southwest Africa. Yeah, that's what that is. Al-Marak. The farthest west, Al-Maghrib, Al-Aqsa, yeah, mm-hmm. Al-Morocco, yeah, the America far west, mm-hmm. This is the far west, Morocco. You're in the United States of Morocco. Google it, research it, find it up. Yeah, that went out of play in what, 57, 56, mm-hmm, when they switch it over. So you need to understand that the Moorish Americans are the descendants of the ancient Moabites. Okay, so for all of us who holding on, just remember you're holding on to Jesus, but you don't want to be a Moor, don't want to be a claim of Moor. And the prophet came and told us that the Moorish Americans are the descendants of the ancient Moabites. So check this out, whom inhabited these shores. See, they were the first one to inhabit these shores and pave the way 10 to 12,000 years before the first European. See, the European tried to tell me with his DNA search that I was from the early Virginia people, and he tried to put it at 300 and some years. I knew that was a flim-flam, a shenanigan, a hoodwink. I knew that was out the gate because I'm from ancient people. Yeah, I'm from ancient people. So just for him putting me in Virginia area, that made me go check, who are the real Virginia people? And when I went to study who the real Virginia people is, and they precede the Europeans by 12,000 years, It's right. You can go Google it. It's right. You go to all the tri-water people and all that stuff. By the way, the Virginia Company was the first colony, the first company. See, these are all companies. Virginia, Texas, Minnesota,
go on and on and on. Now, these are all companies, Africa. These are all companies. So you African-American? Wow. Ooh, you a whole continent and a whole two whole continents. America is North, Central, South, and the adjoining islands. Man, whoa. Who are you? You're just a mix of blood, huh? Yeah, a mix of spirits, huh? That's what this is about, all these different cultures, all these different things that we're holding on to that are not ours. Give them back. Come out of her. That's what it says in Revelation. Come out of her or partake of her sins. You go fall with her. Yeah, when the Titanic sinks, you think you ain't going to fall? You holding on to what she creating you to be. It said the whole world committed adultery with her, the whore that sat on the many waters. Man, we read this stuff and don't understand. It said the whole world committed adultery with her, her ship to trades and cargoes. Go read it. It's a deep prophetic. Yeah, deeply prophetic. And you think that all the other nations of the world, the great God of the universe, sent prophets and messengers to save and redeem a fallen nation before he crush them, before he send fire and brimstone and send down stuff on them. He sends one to raise them from amongst them, one who speaks their own language. One who walks like them, talks like them, breathes like them, who came from a mother and father like them. You think Yahushua, Jesus, didn't have a mother and a father? How can it be an example for you? Because your excuse would be, well, shoot, man, you just come from a woman, not from a father. You can't feel exactly what I feel, only to a certain extent. So you always say, excuse, oh, he paid the price for you, and you won't do nothing for yourself. Not understanding that, nah, he came just like you, and he had to work to suppress his lower self. This is about the self. The I self, higher self and lower self. And that's what you're striving and struggling every day just to win. The battle is on. The great battle is on. The battle of the mind. And everything outside of you is a reflection of what's inside of you. So create your world. Man, thank you for joining in to Vlog Talk Radio. Good morning, Jesus, Suleiman Bey. I thank Allah. I praise Allah the Most High, man. And I give honors to the prophet and messenger, Noble Dr. Ali. I thank you, Allah, so much for Noble Dr. Ali coming to us. Yeah, he brought us the 18 missing years that was missing out of our Bibles. So y'all need to go study that. Okay, so we need to get on to some, okay, that was that segment. Now, we're going to start pulling up some readings here. I wanted to go into, let's do this one first. I want to show y'all something. Let's do this. Racial integrity. Act of 1924. That's what I want y'all to follow. Racial Integrity Act of 1924. Just Google it if you're following along and pull that up. You will see which one is going to be the best one, what I'm looking for. Racial Integrity Act of 1924 to 30, Encyclopedia of Virginia. Okay, let's see. Now listen, I want y'all to see how in-depth this is. I want y'all to see how deep and when the crooked machinations of people around here to call themselves your brothers or sisters, your Christian masters that you love so much. Man, the prophet Noble Dr. Ali said give Christianity and the church back to the European. He didn't say give back Yahushua. He said give back Christianity and the church. That was then for their forefathers, and it was given to them by their forefathers for their earthly salvation, where it told us to come back to Islamism, which was given to us by our foremothers and fathers for our earthly and divine salvation, not just for earthly salvation, for earthly and divine salvation. So we read, I started reading the racial integrity laws, and I'm taking this one from the Encyclopedia Virginia. Okay, since this is where this stuff was going on, and since Virginia was the first colony, and on and on and on, I'm going to go and read it there. It's 1924 to 30. Summary. Racial integrity laws were passed by the General Assembly to protect whiteness against what many Virginians perceived to be the negative effects of race mixing. They included the Racial Integrity Act of 1924, which prohibited interracial marriage and defined as white a person who has no trace whatsoever of any blood other than Caucasian. That's impossible. Okay. The Public Assemblages Act of 1926, which required all public meeting spaces to be strictly segregated. Listen how they were doing this. And a third act passed in 1930. That defined as black a person who has even a trace of African-American ancestry. Now, let me stop for a minute because they got a link on this Public Assemblages Act of 1926, and I don't pass up nothing. They're giving me a chance to vote. expound on my knowledge and understanding, right, so I could bring wisdom forth. Bear with me. So Separation of Races, 1926. In Chapter 73A of the 1926 Supplement to the Virginia Code of 1924, Separation of Races, also known as the Public Assemblages Act, the General Assembly required the racial segregation of all public events in Virginia. The act became law without the signature of Governor Harry F. Beard, Sr., on March 22, 1926. It was and was one of the three so-called racial integrity laws passed between 1924 and 1930. The act became law without the signature of the governor. Wow. Let me go to that for a second. Harry F. Byrd. Harry F. Byrd served as Virginia State Senator 1915 to 1925, governor from 1926 to 1930 during that act, and United States Senator 1933 to 1965. Was the father of a U.S. senator, and for 40 years led the Democratic political machine known as the Byrd Organization. By virtue of both his service and power, he was one of the most prominent Virginians of the 20th century. But much of that power was wielded in mostly vain opposition to the New Deal's big government program and the civil rights legislation of the 1960s. As governor, he instituted a popular downsize in the state government that increased efficiency, but the end of his career was marked by his now infamous massive resistance to federally mandated school desegregation. He didn't want schools desegregated. He wanted everybody segregated there. Okay, now let's go back to the real cut. So that was the Public Assemblies Act of 1926, which required all public meeting spaces to be strictly segregated. And a third act passed in 1930 that defined as black a person who has even a trace of African-American blood. Let's see the third act. It's called the 1930s. It's called the Colored Persons and Indians Defined. It says, in colored persons and Indians defined from the Code of Virginia 1930, the General Assembly provides the legal definitions of colored persons and Indians. See, they go define who you are, what's a colored person and Indian. See, that's how they send the Census Bureau into our houses, into our huts, and come in there and look at you, ask you some questions. If you wasn't on European thought and ideology, when they ask you questions, if you didn't look right and speak right, then they label you colored or something else and denationalize you and start taking your land away from you. But remember, we on our own land, see, and start stripping you out. So you the same person, colored, Indian, Negro, you're all the same people. Okay. The General Assembly provides legal definitions of colored person and Indians. This is one of three so-called racial integrity laws. Okay, so let's hit on that. Bam, colored person and Indians. Indians in Virginia. Summary. So you got to dig. You can't just read some. You can't just get one definition. You got to have legal dictionaries. You got to have unabridged dictionaries that go in depth. You know, you can't just be on Webster's, man. You can't just be on your phone on Google, man. You got to go in there. You got to go hard file, hard copy. Okay, go tough, go hard. Okay, entry, Indians in Virginia. Summary, Indians have lived in the area now known as Virginia for thousands of years. Their histories, ancestral connections, and traditions are intertwined with the 6,000 square miles of tidewater land the Algonquian-speaking Indians of Virginia called Tesnacomoco. And I got to get that right because that's my people. Yeah, no, it is. That's my tribe already. Understand me, the early inhabitants of Virginia were hunter-gatherers who followed the migratory patterns of animals. Now, let me go back. Speaking Indians of Virginia called, let me get the pronunciation, Powhatan, Paramount, Chief Don, Powhatan. They call it T-S-N, I can't pronounce it, Tessinacomoco. One of my ancestors will give it to me. Because that's what my bloodline said. The Europeans tell me, you from the early Virginia people, but they tried to say 300 years. I knew that was a fling flam. Yeah, so I wouldn't study who the real early Virginia people is. Powhatan. Pocahontas. Yeah, so summary. Tesnacomoco, otherwise known as the Powhatan Paramount Chieftain, was a political alliance of Algonquian-speaking Virginia Indians that occupied the area first settled by the English at Jamestown. The origins of Tanakamoko date to the late woodland period. 28 to 32 groups, each with his own chief, paid tribute to Powhatan, the paramount chief of Tanakamoko, with boundaries that stretch from the James River to the Potomac and west to the Fall Line. Tanakamoko had a population, we're supposed to say Powhatan, had a population of around 15,000 people. The name of the Paramount Chiton was first recorded by the early English settler William Strachey. And while some scholars disagree, it may be translated to mean densely inhabited place. Living in riverside towns, the Indians that, see, I got to hit on some of these buttons. The Algonquian speaking. We're going to do some searching today. Languages, Algonquian speaking. Languages and interpreters in early Virginia Indian society. Early Virginia Indians spoke dialects of Algic, Iroquoian, or Sequoian. Three large linguistic families that include many of the more than 800 indigenous languages in North America. I'm going to pull out my dictionary today and get the pronunciation of those two, my big one. Three large linguistic families that include many of the more than 800 indigenous languages in North America. Among Virginia's Algic Powhatan Indians, who lived in the Tidewater and encountered the Jamestown settlers in 1607. Gee, they tried to give me my history for 400 years. Little was known of their language. A form of Algic known as Virginian Algonquian, although Captain John Smith and John Smith married Pocahontas, and William Strachey both composed influential vocabulary lists. The Notawas and the Maherans lived south of the James, near the fall line, and spoke Iroquoian. Although the Maherian language was never recorded, it has been identified as Iroquoian based on geography. In 1820, John Wood interviewed the elderly Notawa queen, Edie Turner, and created a word list that eventually was recognized as Iroquoian. Virginia Sionian speakers, meanwhile, largely lived west of the fall line and included the Monacans, the Monacahawks, and the Sapanis. Many Virginian Indians, encouraged by the requirements of trade, diplomacy, and warfare, spoke multiple languages. And when the English arrived, they and the Powhatans eagerly exchanged boys to learn each other's language and serve as interpreters. By the 20th century, most, if not all, Virginia Indian languages had become extinct, meaning that no native speakers survived. I mean, they were slaughtering people. How that happened? I mean, they were slaughtering people. You feel me? So you only got youth being raised. That's why you can't speak it. Only youth being raised. Ancestors being slaughtered. That's the history in this hemisphere and this up here. They didn't teach about slavery. The slaughtering that was going on of the tribe so they could indoctrinate you, so they can, you know, whoop you into submission. A child only going to know what they've been taught. And if you born with a different tongue, if you born in a house with another tongue, that's the tongue you going to know when you grow up. And when the English arrived, they and the Powhatans eagerly exchanged boys to learn each other's language and serve as interpreters. By the 20th century, most, if not all, Virginia Indians' language had become extinct, meaning that no native speaker survived. Okay. So let's go back. So just showing you who we are, man. Now, this is the Racial Integrity Act starting in Virginia. So the Public Assemblies Act of 1926, which required all public meeting spaces to be strictly segregated, and a third act that we just read passed in 1930 that defined as black a person who has even a trace of African-American ancestry. So they made everybody black. They just tell you right there. They just made everybody black. They wouldn't people houses with census the same way, made everybody black. You got any a trace of African-American ancestry, they just made you black. This way of defining whiteness as a kind of purity in bloodline became known as the one-drop rule. These laws arrived at a time when pseudoscience of white superiority called eugenics gained support by groups like the Anglo-Saxon Clubs of America, which argued that the mixing of whites, African Americans, and Virginia Indians could cause great societal harm. And let me hit that link. I think we just read that, Indians in Virginia. Yeah, we just read that one. Despite the fact that the races had been intermixed since European settlement. From his position as the state registrar of vital statistics, so he's taking the birth certificates in. See, that's where the whole flum-flam came in, registering you put black on there. On my mom's birth certificate, her parents say Negro. On my birth certificate, my parents say that they black. Well, how if my mom and their parents was Negro, how am I black?
how I come something other than them. My mom and my dad on the birth certificate is Negro and their parents, but on me, I was born a black.
Okay. Y'all better wake up. Okay. Let's buy, okay. From this his position as the state registrar of vital statistics, Walter A. Plecker micromanaged the racial classifications of Virginians, often worrying that blacks were attempted to pass as white. Let me hit that link. Surnames by counties and cities of mixed Negroid Virginia families striving to pass as Indian or white. Oh, by Walter A. Plecker. Oh, man. In this pamphlet, dating to about 1943, Walker A. Plecker, the state registrar of vital statistics, lists the surnames of Virginians he suspects are trying to pass as Indian or white. Oh, my goodness. See? You see what you get? You see the kind of stuff that you get into? You see the kind of people that's on the world? Well, there's all the kind of stuff in here. I'm going to go copy all this stuff. I'm going to print out all this stuff. See, I don't even read stuff. I print it out, and I sit back, and I study it, and I highlight, and I go get down and to the business. Yeah, I'm going to get down to the business on that. And I'm going to give you some news that you can use. Put that out for my children. Let me get on that. They fit to get on that. Yeah, you might find your name in that, in Walter's list. Might find my family's name. You know, Walter Boyd list. What Walter got going on? So, okay. So, bam. Okay, Virginia Indians were particularly incensed by the law and by Plecker in particular because the state seemed intent on removing any legal recognition of Indian identity in favor of the broader category colored. See? Look what happened to us. After one failed try, lawmakers largely achieved this goal in 1930, drawing negative reaction from the black press. The Racial Integrity Act remained on the books until 1967, when the U.S. Supreme Court in Loving v. Virginia prohibition of interracial marriage to be unconstitutional. But you will see this thing, we could go on some more. In 2001, the General Assembly denounced the act and eugenics as racist. Okay. Background. White Virginians had long been concerned with carefully defining the legal rights of different races. Interracial relationships and thus mixed-race children were common from the earliest settlement period among whites, free blacks, and Indians, especially under slavery, when female slaves were regularly subjected to forced relations with white men. Despite the close social connections between races, the legal system created separate racial categories in order to establish status and rights. Ooh, listen to this, y'all. I'm trying to tell y'all, don't be a Negro, black, and color. Black lives don't matter. It's only profitable for the European, at the European, you know, profit, benefit. In 1662, the General Assembly articulated the key concept that a child follows the condition of the mother, no matter the status of the father. Both provide an incentive for slaveholders to increase their slave property by impregnating enslaved women and also contributing to the concept that whiteness would be defined by the absence of blackness. In 1705, so they keep on having these birth certificates for the Monair, keep their property, build these trusts with this property, as they've been doing. In 1705, so you steal my slave, you steal my nigga. Got your birth certificate bonded you, got securities in your name and interest. In 1705, the General Assembly articulated specific racial groups and restricted the rights of African Americans, Indians, and mulattoes, defining the latter as anyone who was the child of an Indian or the child, grandchild, or great-grandchild of an African American. So let me go to that one, defining the latter. Primary document, an act declaring who shall not bear office in this country, October 1705. In an act declaring who shall not bear office in this country, passed in October 1785, the General Assembly establishes eligibility requirements for holding office in Virginia. It also provides a legal definition of mulatto. I'm going to go get that. See? Let me go down. See? They tell you, man, see? Who are you? It's important to put it on record. Who are you in these day and age? So, okay. As anyone who was the child of an Indian or the child, grandchild, or great-grandchild of an African-American. In 1785, that definition was simplified. A mulatto was anyone with one-fourth or more Negro blood. In 1860, the definition stayed the same. 6 years later, however, mulatto was replaced by the word colored, and Indians were now defined as not colored and having one-fourth or more Indian blood. Now, let's go. Indians defined. Let's go to that primary act. An act to amend and reenact the ninth section of Chapter 103 of the Code of Virginia for 1866. In an act to amend, summary, in an act to amend and reenact the ninth section of Chapter 103 of the Code of Virginia for 1860 from the Code of Virginia 1866. The General Assembly provides a legal definition of the word mulatto and outlines criminal punishment for African Americans. Here you go. I'm a download, read all that. An act to amend and reenact the ninth section, let me see. Being enacted by the General Assembly that every person having one-fourth or more of Negro blood shall be deemed a colored person, and every person not a colored person having one-fourth or more of Indian blood shall be deemed an Indian. So go get checked, y'all, and see if you got more than one-fourth of Indian blood. So then you won't be uncriminalized as a Negro under the Negro Act, and you could get yourself out of these prisons. You heard it here first on Blog Talk Radio, because you can't be criminalized under the Negro crimes. That's why they have the Sundry Free Moors Act. Another law. Okay, one-fourth more of Indian blood. Let's see what that say. Okay, we already did that. Enid for Virginia. All laws in respect to crimes and punishment in respect to criminal proceedings applicable to white persons shall imply in like manner to colored persons and to Indians, unless when it is otherwise specifically provided. Okay. The following acts and parts of acts are hereby repealed, namely all acts and parts of acts relating to slaves and slavery. Chapter 107 of the Code of 1860 related to free Negroes. Chapter 200 of said code related to offenses by Negroes. See, just breaking down with the acts. Three-fourths or one-fourth or more of Indian blood should be deemed an Indian. So this stuff is, okay, let me go back. For more Indian blood. That definition remained the same in 1887 and 1910, but in the latter year, the Assembly broadened its definition of a colored person to someone with 1/16 or more Negro blood, blacking you out more. Such definition were a function of white supremacy or a way of organized society in which whites used the law, social customs, and sometimes violence to maintain power over other racial groups. In time, some whites came to believe that their power were threatened by immigration, and especially racial mixing. Although non-marital relationships were commonplace, interracial marriages that legally recognized any such relationships have been prohibited in Virginia since 1691 and declared absolutely void since 1849. Still, whites, blacks, and Indians in Virginia sometimes marry. According to federal census reports, between 1890 and 1910, the number of mixed-race Virginians, or mulattoes, as they were referred to in the census, increased from 122,441 to 222,910. However, that number dropped drastically in 1920 to 164,171. Some white people wonder whether this change, along with a longer, more gradual decline in the number of black Virginians, was the result of African Americans passing as white. Okay. So let me go back now. Okay, definitely about it. Helping to fuel these concerns was the eugenics movement, which was based on the idea that humans can be selectively bred in similar ways to plants and animals. So now that's what will take us to the Willie Lynch. Using large statistical studies, eugenics purported to scientifically demonstrate that mental illness and criminal tendencies were inherited and should be specifically limited in the human population. They also argued that African Americans, Indian, poor people, criminals, prostitutes, and alcoholics all suffered from inferior genes. For this reason, many eugenicists maintained it was critically important that whites not mix with supposedly inferior races. Eugenics was later widely discredited as pseudoscience. Let me drink a little of this water and this tea I got. Y'all are right out there. You on Blog Talk Radio, the morning of Suleiman Bay. Hope I'm giving y'all a lot. and those you can use, man. That's what this is about. So let me speed up from here a minute. You need to pull that up and just read that, and you'll see how they was in the prison industry, and they was without people knowing, they was sterilizing women and sterilizing people. Yeah, so you getting all these shots every year that your prison families in your family and our families in these prisons getting shots every year, whether they want to or not. They hitting them with a needle. So what's that about? You feel me? Hit them with a needle, tearing up your genes, messing with them. So now let's get to that's that. Now let's hit up some the Willie Lynch. And I'm going to pull that one out and read it, because I'm going to go back and study a lot of this. I'm going to go pull a lot, print out a lot of this stuff and be on the study ball, okay? Ooh, this stuff is big. Okay. So let's go. Okay, I will type that in. Let's go. Racial integrity after we just did that. So now let's hit up Willie Lynch letter, y'all. And that's Willie Lynch. Type that in. Willie Lynch letter. Making of a slave, all right? PDF. Willie Lynch letter, making of a slave. Now, which one I want? That's all. I just want to see which one I want. Oh. Let's see here. Okay, Willie Lynch letter. That's what I need to see. Let's see. Okay, let's see. I'm just trying to find one, a good version here. There you have it. I might be one of the ones to look. And I don't want to go through all that just to pull up the file. Just wanted to pop up on the screen, you know? Open. Okay, I see. Let's see, Willie Lynch. Okay, there. Nah, I don't want it on that. I just want it to pop up. Let's go. Let's find Wikipedia. There you go. Wikipedia go have it. Nobody else got some Willie Lynch or something like that. Wikipedia go let me get into some parts of it. Ooh. Ooh, that tickle brings something out. I'm going to have to go boo-boo or something. Excuse me, I don't know. Okay, that one ain't, this one ain't as in-depth as the one I want to read. So let's see. Now, I need one that just pop out. Bam. Let's see. Documentary. What do you mean? Documentary. You know, Letter in the Big Destruction of Black Unity. Let's see. Willie Lynch letter. No. I don't need no PDF filler. I just want to see the thing, y'all. Okay. Okay, here it comes. It's opening it up. We'll get on to it. We'll get on to it. It's opening it up over here. Okay, there we go. Now, let me open this up for us. We got a few minutes and we'll be, I'm getting hot. I'm going to hit this tea. This tea is opening up, y'all. I'm trying to tell you. Okay, so now as we were going through the eugenics and we went through that, the Racial Integrity Act, it led us to how they was casting us off and, calling us colored and stuff and talking about due to the mental illnesses and that we had tendencies for trouble and crime and stuff like that we were just reading. So now the Willie Lynch letter and the making of the flag. Introduction. The infamous Willie Lynch letter gives both African and Caucasian students and teachers some insight concerning the brutal and inhumane psychology behind the African slave trade. The materialistic viewpoint of Southern plantation owners that slavery was a business and the victims of chattel slavery were merely pawns in an economic game of debauchery, crossbreeding, interracial rape, and mental conditioning of a Negro race they considered subhuman. Introduction. Equally important is the international nature of the European economic, political, and cultural climate that influenced the slave trade. Within the time scale of African history, it was a relatively short period, a mere 1.5 centuries from the most intensive phase of the Atlantic slave trade to the advent of European administration and dominance. Look at that. Long before that, the slave coast had been chartered by the Portuguese and the people off the area west of Benin between the Volta River and Lagos. European traders traced a cultural history which linked them with the earliest Yoruba settlements to the north and eastern borders of Africa. There were considerable debates during the colonial periods in the United States in the late 1700s. The attention of the national government was mainly directed to slavery and the rising number of slaves traded and imported into the South. The first debate was held in Congress in 1789 on the question of whether taxes should be paid on imported slaves. During the debate on the slavery duty bill, which was introduced by Mr. Clymer's committee, Parker of Virginia moved that on May 13, 1789, a tax of $10 per capita be laid on slaves imported. He plainly stated that the tax was designed to check the trade and that he was sorry that the Constitution prevented Congress from prohibiting the importation altogether. The proposal was evidently unwelcome and caused extended debate. Smith of South Carolina wanted to postpone the matter, so big with the serious consequences to the state he represented. Roger Sherman of Connecticut could not reconcile himself to the insertion of human beings as an article of duty among goods, wares, and merchandise. Jackson of Georgia argued against any restriction and thought such states such as Virginia ought to let their neighbors get supplied before they impose such a burden upon the importation. Some congressmen argued that Congress should wipe off the stigma under which America labored. This brought Jackson again to his feet. He believed, in spite of the fashion of the day, that Negroes were better off as slaves than as freedmen, and that as the tax was partial, it would be the most odious tax Congress could impose. Such sentiments were a distinct advance in pro-slavery doctrine and called for a protest from Congressman Madison of Virginia. They were both moral arguments and legal positions to the question of slavery in the South. On one side, it began with the rights of man and descended to sticking for it to have a decent appearance on the statute book. On the other side, it began with the uplifting of the heathen and descended to a denial of the applicability of moral principles to the question. Now, I'm going to go down some. Anyway, I'm going to go on and get on to Willie. And let me hit my... Let me check my thing over here because I have to make sure I have enough time to give it to us. So I have to extend my time on there real quick. Let me get back over to the PDF. Okay, Willie Lynch. This speech was delivered by a white slave owner, Willie Lynch, on the bank of the James River, 1712. Willie Lynch, the untold story, 1712. And it says, and the message is still true today. You on Blog Talk Radio, the morning drip with Suleiman Bey, man. Y'all tap into us at illegalempowermentgroup101.com and follow us at Instagram, Illegal Empowerment Group, too. We got do-it-yourself ebooks, kits you get with, man, to, you know, foreign businesses and credit repairs and stuff like that there. Go to health.info. That's the word health, like healthcare with the dashes between each letter. H-E-A-L-T-H.info. Tax deductible, 501c3, total 100%. Get your bread back. So, I mean, we take the finance to upraise the nation. We got chapters in California and Texas, and we do be hood to hood. Whatever we get free and donated, we pass it out to the hood. And I just downloaded a big old files, two of them that I just bought, two big old files that I paid for. You got to pay for stuff if you want on all the secret surplus, government surpluses and all that stuff, but giving away, stuff like that. So we're going to be working harder this year, way harder, and putting up and posting more stuff this year so y'all can see us really getting to the hood like the real Santa Claus. Yeah, not the one to come down your chimney, the one to knock on your door and really give it to you. Okay. Woo. That tea's strong, y'all. The name, okay. Gentlemen, let me get started. I greet you here on the banks of the James River in the year of our Lord, 1712. First, I shall thank you, the gentlemen of the colony of Virginia, for bringing me here. I am here to help you solve some of your problems with slaves. Your invitation reached me on my modest plantation in the West Indies, where I have experimented with some of the newest and still the oldest methods for control of slaves. Ancient Rome would envy us if my program is implemented. Look how he's talking. He slipped with it. He got it figured out. As our boat sails south on the James River, named for our illustrious king, whose version of the Bible we cherish, I saw enough to know your problem is not unique. While Rome used cords of wood as crosses for standing human bodies along its old highways in great numbers. You are here using the tree and rope on occasion. I caught the whiff of a dead slave hanging from a tree for the miles back. You are not only losing valuable stocks by hangings, you are having uprisings. Slaves are running away. Your crops are sometimes left in the field too long for maximum profit. You suffered occasional fires. Your animals are killed. Gentlemen, you know what problems are. I do not need to elaborate. I am not here to enumerate your problems. However, I am here to introduce you to a method of solving them. In my bag here, I have a foolproof method for controlling your black slaves. I guarantee every one of you that if it is installed correctly, it will control the slaves for at least 300 years. My method is simple. Any member of your family or your overseer can use it. I have outlined a number of differences among the slaves, and I take these differences and make them bigger. I use fear, distrust, and envy for control purposes. These methods have worked on my modest plantation in the West Indies, and it will work throughout the South. Take this simple little list of differences and think about them. On top of my list is age, but it is there only because it starts with an A. The second is color or shade. There is intelligence, size, sex, size of plantation, status on plantation, attitude of owners, whether the slaves live in the valley, on the hill, east, west, north, or south, have fine hair, coarse hair, or is tall or short. Now that you have a list of differences, I shall give you an outline of action. But before that, I shall assure you that distrust is stronger than trust, and envy is stronger than adulation, respect, or admiration. The black slave, after receiving this indoctrination, shall carry on and will become self-refueling and self-generating for hundreds of years, maybe thousands. I got a sip on that one. Mm. When I first read this, I had to recognize that this is us, this is me. This is what I could see this in myself. You know, I was deprogramming. I had to be honest. The first thing in 12-step program is you have to admit to our higher powers, admit that you was powerless. You got to accept that you've been hoodwinked, you've been programmed, you've been created in somebody else's image and likeness. And that's what's been traded to the world as light, but it's really darkness because the world is in darkness. Look at all the hurt and the pain and all the people suffering. When we enlightening the nation is like that. A king rules and then a just king rules and the whole empire is happy. Y'all don't hear me though. Ooh, that stuff burning me up. Okay, he said now, for thousands of years, he said, the black slaves, after receiving this indoctrination, shall carry on and will become self-refueling and self-generated for hundreds of years, maybe thousands. Don't forget, you must pitch the old black male versus the young black male and the young black male against the old black male. You must use the dark-skinned slaves versus the light-skinned slaves and the light-skinned slaves versus the dark-skinned slaves. You must use the female versus the male and the male versus the female. You must also have your white servants and overseers distrust all blacks. But it is necessary your slaves trust and depend on us. They must love, respect, and trust only us. Gentlemen, these kits are the keys to control. Use them. Have your wives and children use them. Never miss an opportunity. If you use intensely for 1 year, the slaves themselves will remain perpetually distrustful. Thank you, gentlemen. Now, here we go. Frederick Douglass. Okay, here we go. Let's Make a Slave is a study of the scientific process of man-breaking and slave-making. It describes the rationale and results of the Anglo-Saxons' ideas and methods of ensuring the master-slave relationship. Let's Make a Slave, the origin and development of a social being called the Negro. Let us make a slave a slave. What do I need? First of all, we need a black nigger man, a pregnant nigger woman, and her baby nigger boy. Second, I will use the same basic principle that we use in the breaking of a horse, combined with some more sustaining factors. When we do it with horses, we break them from one form of life to another. That is, we reduce them from their natural state in nature, whereas nature provides them with a natural capacity to take care of their needs and the needs of their offspring. We break that natural string of independence from them and thereby create a dependency state so that we may be able to get from them useful production for our business and pleasure. Mm. cardinal principles for making a Negro. For fear that our future generations may not understand the principles of breaking both horse and man, we lay down the art. For if we are to sustain our basic economy, we must break and tie both of the beasts together, the nigger and the horse. We understand that short-range planning in economics results in periodic chaos, so that to avoid turmoil in the economy, it requires us to have breadth and depth in long-range comprehensive planning, articulating both skills and sharp perception. Ooh, they like that short-range stuff. Ain't gonna work. We got to think long, far, and hard, in depth, and in breadth, and with long-range comprehensive planning. And that's what they did. So this will be perpetuated for 300 years, for maybe thousands. And look at us. We lay down the following principles for long-range comprehensive economic planning. One, both horse and nigger are no good to the economy in the wild or natural state. Both must be broken and tied together for orderly production. For the orderly futures, special and particular attention must be paid to the female and the young offspring. Both must be crossbred to produce a verity and division of labor. Both must be taught to respond to a particular new language. Psychological and physical instruction of containment must be created for both. Contain them psychologically and physically. We hold the above six cardinal principles as truths to be self-evident, based on the following discourse concerning the economics of breaking and tying the horse and the nigger together, all inclusive of the six principles laid down above. Note, neither principle alone will suffice for good economics. All principles must be employed for the orderly good of the nation. They want to put their foot on their neck all the way, all six of them, employ all six of the codes for them, the principles. Okay. Accordingly, both a wild horse and a wild or natural nigger is dangerous, even if captured, for they will have a tendency to seek their customary freedom, and in doing so might kill you in your sleep. You cannot rest. They sleep while you are awake and are awake while you are asleep. They are dangerous near the family house, and it requires too much labor to watch them away from the house. Above all, you cannot get them to work in the natural state. Hence, both the horse and the nigger must be broken, that is, break them from one form of mental life to another. Keep the body and take the mind. In other words, break the will to resist. Now, the breaking process is the same for both the horse and the nigger, only slightly varying in degrees. But as we said before, there is an art in long-range economic planning. You must keep your eye and thoughts on the female and the offspring of the horse and the nigger. Watch this. A brief discourse in offspring development will shed light on the key to sound economic principles. Pay little attention to the generation of original breaking, but concentrate on future generations. Therefore, if you break the female mother, she will break the offspring in its early years of development, and when the offspring is old enough to work, she will deliver it up to you, for her normal female protective tendencies will have been lost in the original breaking process. Yeah, because she go teach you from inside the womb. Yeah, you got to be strong in your physical, but weak in your mind, because master will kill you. For example, take the case of the wild stud horse, a female horse and an already infant horse, and compare the breaking process with the two nigger males in their natural state, a pregnant nigger woman with her infant offspring. Take the stud horse. Break him for limited containment. Completely break the female horse until she becomes very gentle, whereas you or anybody can ride her in comfort. Break the mare and the stud until you have the desired offspring. Then you can turn the stud to freedom until you need him again. Train the female horse whereby she will eat out of your hand, and she will in turn train the infant horse to eat out of your hand also. When it comes to break the uncivilized nigger, use the same process, but vary in degree the pressure so as to do a complete reversal of the mind. Take the meanest and most restless nigger, strip him of his clothes in front of the remaining male niggers, the female, the nigger infant, tar and feather him. Tie each leg to a different horse in opposite directions. Set him afire and beat both horse to pull him apart in front of the remaining niggers. Look at this brutality. The next step is to take a bull whip and beat the remaining nigger male to the point of death in front of the female and the infant, whatever's left of them, and the ones are sitting around. Don't kill him, but put the fear of God in him, for he can be useful for future breeding. All the ones sitting around. The breaking process of the African woman. Then take the female and run a series of tests on her to see if she will submit to your desire willingly. He will come see if he can touch you, get you wherever he wants you. Yeah, test her in every way because she is the most important factor for good economics. See why our woman is in date? They got our woman taking the clothes off, bands make her dance, and they using us to sell the culture to keep our woman down. And she's the first civil and first teacher. First, come on, y'all. Test her in every way because she is the most important factor for good economics. If she shows any sign of resistance in her submitting completely to your will, do not hesitate to use the bull whip on her to extract the last bit of bitch out of her. You see that? That's when you wonder why we call you bitch. You wonder why we call you bitch. That's what Tupac said. See, they creating these words and this stuff for you. That's not what you've seen your woman as. This was what was created of us from a situation. Take care not to kill her. For in doing, sir, you spoil good economics. When in complete submission, she will train her offspring in the early years to submit to labor when they become of age. Standing is the best thing. Therefore, we shall go deeper into this area of the subject matter concerning what we have produced here in this breaking process of the female nigger. We have reverse relationships. In her natural uncivilized state, she would have a strong dependency on the uncivilized nigger male, and she would have a limited protective tendency toward her dependent male offspring and would raise the female offspring to be dependent like her. Nature had provided time with this balance. We reverse nature by burning and pulling one civilized nigger apart and bull-whipping the other to the point of death, all in her presence. By her being left alone, unprotected, with the male image destroyed, the ordeal caused her to move from her psychological dependent state to a frozen independent state. In this frozen psychological state of independence, she will raise her male and female offspring in reversed roles. For fear of the young man's life, she will psychologically train him to be mentally weak and dependent but physically strong. Because she has become psychologically independent, she would train her female offsprings to be psychologically independent. What have you got? You've got the nigger woman out front and the man behind and scared. This is a perfect situation for sound sleep and economics. Before the breaking process, we had to alertly be on guard at all times. Now we can sleep soundly, for out of frozen fear, his woman stands guard for us. He cannot get past her infant slave process. He is a good tool, now ready to be tied to the horse at a tender age. By the time a nigger boy reaches the age of 16, he is soundly broken in and ready for life, sound and efficient work, and the reproduction of a unit of good labor force. Tenderly, through the breaking of uncivilized savage niggers, by throwing the nigger female savage into a frozen psychological state of independency, by killing the protective male image, by creating a submissive dependent mind of the nigger male savage, we have created an orbiting cycle that turns on its own axis forever unless a phenomenon occurs and we shift the positions of the female savages. We show what we mean by example. Take the case of two economic slave units and examine them closely. Listen, this stuff, I can't make this up, man. I can't make this stuff up, man. Y'all got to understand what's been done to us, man. It's in depth. You know, it's a mind state. Like, you got to understand, it's psychological warfare. Like, man, look at this. This is, man, look about the marriage. Y'all got to pull these documents up and read them for yourself. Pull them out. You know, I know during the day you got toil and struggle and you worried about what they think you think is a bill. But at the end of the day, when you go sit down to rest, oh, hey, baby, and then when you get ready to rest, you need to pick up and get all the foolishness out of you and download and put in some good substance before you go to sleep. Read a good book, some good literature, some good before you go to bed for a couple hours. Get all the day because you got to start back over with the rest of the BS for the day, all the clutter, the smog in the air, all the confusion, the chaos. You got to deal with all the spirits, all that later. When you get home and cleanse and wash off, get time to, before you go to bed, put some good stuff in you. So while you in a resting state,
your spirit, your body can be dissolving that stuff and growing it, and so it can become to fruition and make it become something. Man, so we need to be going. We can't be putting junk in it. Them days are over. You are what you eat. What you put in is what you get out. Mm-hmm. The Negro marriage unit. We breed two Negro males with two Negro females. And then we take the Negro males from them, keep them moving and working. Say the one Negro male female bear a Negro female, and the other bears a Negro male. Both Negro females, being without the influence of the Negro image, those with an independent psychology, would raise their offspring into reverse positions. The one with the female offspring will teach her to be like herself, independent and negotiable. We negotiate with her, through her, by her, and negotiate at her will. The one with the Negro male offspring, she being frozen with a subconscious fear for his life, will raise him to be mentally dependent and weak, but physically strong, in other words, body over mind. Now, in a few years, when these offspring become fertile for early reproduction, we will mate and breed them and continue the cycle. That is good, sound, and long-range comprehensive planning. I got to finish this TA, man. We've been created. Now it's supposed to be what they call Black History Month. Man, that's only so many years since they made the word black for you. Ooh, that neem. You got to have that neem. That turmeric. Put a little turmeric. Put neem on my face. Turmeric make my face so smooth. So clear, I put neem on my face. Neem powder. Put it into a paste. Leave it on there. Yeah, my face is so smooth and soft. Mm-hmm. I drink that turmeric in my tea. I make my own tea. That turmeric will be doing good, too. I make you the bathroom, too. That made me a good herbal. Okay, so warning, simple interloping negatives. Earlier, we talked about the non-economic good of the horses and the nigger in their wild or natural state. We talked out the principle of breaking and tying them together for orderly production. Furthermore, we're talking about paying particular attention to the female savage and her offspring ordered for orderly future planning. Then more recently, we stated that by reversing the position of the male and the female savages, we had created an orbiting cycle that turns on its own axis forever until this phenomenon occurred and reshifted the positions of the male and female savages. Our experts warned us about the possibility of this phenomenon occurring, but they say the mind has a strong drive to correct and recorrect itself over a period of time. If it can touch a substantial original historical base, And they advised us that the best way to deal with the phenomenon is to shave off the brute's mental history and create a multiplicity of phenomenon of illusions that each illusion can twirl at its own orbit, something similar to floating balls in a vacuum. So they just created a real for us, an illusion for us, cut off our history. So they did. So that's why you black. That's why you don't know nothing about being a Moor and that you in Morocco right now. You don't know nothing about none of that. You know nothing about your ancestors. No, because of this illusion with the credit. This creation of a multiplicity of phenomenon illusions entails the principles of crossbreeding the nigger and the horse, as we stated above, the purpose of which is to create a diversified division of labor, thereby creating different levels of labor and different values of illusions at each connecting level of labor, the results of which is the severance of the points of original beginnings for each spirit illusion. Since we feel that the subject matter may get more complicated as we proceed in laying down our economic plan concerning the purpose, reasons, and effect of crossbreeding horses and niggers, we shall lay down the following definitional terms for future generations. 1. Orbiting cycle means a thing turning in a given path. 2. Axis means upon which or around which a body turns. 3. Phenomena means something beyond ordinary conception and inspires awe and wonder. For phenomenon. 4. Multiplicity means a great number. 5. Spear means a globe. 6. Crossbreeding niggers means taking as many drops of good white blood and putting them into as many nigger women as possible, varying the drops by various tones that you want, and then letting them breed with each other until circles of colors appear as you desire. What this means is this: put the niggers and the horse in the breeding pot, mix some asses and some good white blood, and what do you get? You got a multiplicity of colors of ass backward ass unusual niggers running tied to backward ass long-headed mules, the production of itself, the other sterile, the one constant, the other dying.
We keep the nigger constant, but we may replace the mule for another tool. But both mule and nigger tied to each other, neither knowing where the other came from and neither productive for itself, nor without each other. Control language. Crossbreeding completed. For further severance from their original beginning, we must completely annihilate the mother tongue to both the new nigger and the new mule and institute a new language that evolves the new life's work of both. You know, language is a peculiar institution. It leads to the heart of a people. The more a foreigner knows about the language of another country, the more he is able to move through all levels of that society. Therefore, if the foreigner is an enemy of another country, to the extent that he knows the body of the language, to that extent is the country vulnerable to attack or invasion of a foreign culture, see? For example, you take a slave. That's what they did to us. They learned the language. If you teach him all about your language, he will know all your secrets, and he is then no more a slave, for you can't fool him any longer. And being a slave is one of the basic ingredients of an incident to maintain the maintenance of the slavery system. For example, if you told a slave that he must perform in getting out our crops, and he knows the language well, he would know that our crops didn't mean our crops, and the slavery system would break down, but he would relate on the basis of what our crops really meant, meaning ain't his. So you had to be careful in setting up the new language, for the slave would soon be in your house talking to you as man to man, and that is death in our economic system. In addition, the definition of words or terms is only a minute part of the process. Values are created and transported by communication through the body of the language. He has many interconnected value systems. All these values in the society have bridges of language to connect them for orderly working in the society. But for these language bridges, these many value systems would shapely clash and cause internal strife or civil war. The degree of the conflict being determined by the magnitude of issues or relative opposing strength in whatever form. For example, if you put a slave in a hog pen and train him to live there and incorporated him to value it as a way of life completely, the biggest problem you would have out of him is that he would worry you about provisions to keep the hog pen clean or partially clean, or he might not worry you at all. On the other hand, if you put this same slave in the same hog pen and make a slip and incorporate something in this language whereby he comes to value a house more than he does his hog pen, you got a problem. He will soon be in your house. Then they hit a letter. Dear Black Americans, this is how we go close. After all these years and all we have been through together, the things we think it's important for us to show our gratitude for all you have done for us. We have chastised you, criticized you, punished you, and in some cases even apologized to you, but we have never formally nor publicly thanked you for your never-ending allegiance and support to our cause. This is our open letter of thanks. We will always be in your debt to you for your labor. You built this country and were responsible for the great wealth we still enjoy today. Upon your back, laden with the stripes we were sometimes had to apply for disciplinary reasons, you carried our nation. We thank you for your diligence and your tenacity. Even when we refused to allow you to even walk in our shadows, you followed close behind, believing that someday we would accept you and treat you like men and women. We publicly and not allow these Black people for raising our children, attending to our sick, preparing our meals while we were occupied with the trappings of the good life. Even during the time when we found pleasure in your women and an enjoyment in seeing your men lynched, maimed, burned, some of you continue to watch over us and our belongings. We simply cannot thank you enough. Your bravery on the battlefield, despite being classified as three-fifths of a man, was and it still is outstanding. We often watched in awe as you went about your prescribed chores and assignments, sometimes laboring in the hot sun for 12 hours to assist in realizing our dreams of wealth and good fortune. Now that we control at least 90% of all the resources and wealth of this nation, we have Black people to thank the most. We can only think of the sacrifices you and your family made to make it all possible. You were there when it all began, and you are still with us today, protecting us from those Blacks who have the temerity to speak out against our past transgressions. Thank you for continuing to bring 95% of what you earn to our businesses. Thanks for buying our heel figures, Carrions, Nikes, and all our other brands you so adore. Your super rich elite athletes, entertainers, intellectuals, and business persons, both legal and illegal, exchanged most of their money for our cars, jewelry, homes, and clothing. What a windfall they have provided for us.
The less fortunate among you spend all they have at our neighborhood stores, enabling us to open even more stores. Sure, they complain about us, but never do anything to hurt us economically. You see, look how they talk. Y'all don't understand the power of unity. Allow us to thank you for not bogging yourself down with the business of doing business with your own people. We can take care of that for you. You just keep doing business with us. It's safer that way. Besides, everything you need, we make anyway, even kente cloth. You just continue to dance, sing, and distrust and hate one another. Have yourself a good time, and this time we'll take care of you. It's the least we can do, considering all that you have done for us. Food for thought. You deserve it, black people, for all your labor, which created our wealth, for your resisting the message of trouble, making blacks like Washington, Booker T. Washington, Delaney, Garvey, Bethlehem, Tubman, and Sir Join the Truth, for fighting and dying on our battlefields. We thank you. And we really thank you for not reading about the many black warriors that participated in the development of our great country. We thank you for keeping it hidden from the younger generation. Thank you for not bringing such glorious deeds to our attention, for allowing us to move into your neighborhoods. We will forever be grateful to you, for you unceasing, for your unceasing desire to be near us, and for hardly ever following through on your threats due to our lack of reciprocity and equity. We thank you so much. We also appreciate your acquiescence to our political agendas, for advocating your own economic self-sufficiency, and for working so diligently for the economic well-being of our people. You are real troopers. And even the 13th, 14th, and 15th amendments were written for you, and many of your relatives died for the rights described therein. You did not resist when we changed those black rights to civil rights and allowed virtually every other group to take advantage of them as well. Black people, you are something else. Your dependence upon us to do the right thing is beyond our imagination, irrespective of what we do to you and the many promises we have made and broken. But this time, we will make it right. We promise. Trust us. Tell you what, you don't need your own hotel. You can continue to stay in ours. You have no need for supermarkets when you can shop at ours 24 hours a day. Why should you even think about owning more banks? You have plenty now. And don't waste your energies trying to break into manufacturing. You work hard enough in our field. Relax. Have a party. We'll sell everything you need. And when you die, we'll even bury you at a discount. How's that for gratitude? Finally, the best part. You went beyond the pale and turned over your children to us for their education. With what we have taught them, it's likely they will continue in a mode similar to the one you have followed for the past 45 years. I'm 46, since school desegregation. When Mr. Lynch walked on the banks of the James River in 1712 and said he would make us a slave for 30 years, little did he realize the truth of this prediction. Just 13 more years and his promise will come to fruition. But with two generations of your children having gone through our education system, we can look forward to at least another 50 years of prosperity. Things could not be better. It's all because of you. For all you have done, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts, Black America. You are the best friend any group of people can ever have. Sincerely, all other Americans. Now, let me just end it like this. It says, few Americans, black or white, recognize the degree to which early African American history is a maritime history. W. Jeffrey Bolster shatters the myth that the black seafaring in the age of sail was limited to the Middle Passage. Seafaring was one of the most significant occupations among both enslaved and free black men between 1790 and 1865. Ten of thousands of black seamen sailed on lofty clippers and modest coasters. They sailed in whalers, warships, and privateers. Some were slaves forced to work at sea, but by 1800, most were free men seeking liberation and economic opportunity aboard ships. Blackjacks placed sailors of color squarely at the center of the Atlantic maritime culture. W. Jeffrey Bolster deserves our thanks for recovering an exciting, essential chapter in African American history, one that not only deepens our appreciation for the roles black men played as both able seamen and buccaneers, but also vividly demonstrates the fluidity and multidimensional complexity of black identity. Charles Johnson, author of The Middle Passage. Yeah. So that was our Willie Lynch breakdown today. And we got 5 minutes. And I just want to thank y'all for sliding through the morning drift. I do this for my self-education. I just like to study and read and learn. I thank Allah for bringing me to where I am today. And like I said, it's to teach one, each one, greet one, and teach one. That's what it's about, so we become one. We got to unify. We got to do better together. You are a tribe. You are a nation. Your people, you are a tribe, your nation. These corporations have been harming and injuring us for years. You got a long paper trail, sue them. Get together, class action, sue them. That's how you get your 40 acres and a million your reparations. And be your own self, be your own people. You give the Church of Christianity back to them. You don't have to give Yahushua back to them. You never knew that, who that is. But it's a lot of missing links in between what they fed us in the Bible and what's in there and really the works of Yahushua and what he did. So I want y'all to know that Jesus did come again, but his name is not Jesus. His name is Yahushua, and he came in the image of Timothy Jew, known as Noble Jew Ali. And I bear witness that the spirit of truth lives on because it comes to us. Martin Luther King was Yahushua come again. Look at his spirit, the spirit of love, spirit of truth. Look how he walked. Look how he marched. Look what he talked. Look what he taught us. And if you can't kill us, man, we're going to keep growing, keep multiplying. That's why it's in the spirit. That's why you got to get out and teach people, because you can't kill what you teach. If you hold it to yourself, who can it grow with? Once you die, it's gone. So you got to lead people. You got to mentor people. You got to be an example. So that's what this is about. People don't want to lead. They want to follow. So people like me and people like the other brothers and sisters doing the work got to keep pushing forward so the followers can follow and they can take notes and get on board. Because I was a follower for a long time, not understanding that I was a leader. The whole time I was following, I was really a leader, you know, but I was leading the wrong way. So that's how that goes. So once again, like I said, I want to thank y'all for sliding through the morning drip when I'm on Block Talk Radio with Suleiman Bey. And don't forget to tap into us at LegalEmpowermentGroup101.com. Don't forget to go over to QueenKitty.net for your feminine hygiene products. That's QueenKitty.net and QueenKitty at Instagram. And check us out at Instagram and Legal Empowerment Group, too, for your do-it-yourself e-books and stuff like that. We got it for you. Need your information at Legal Empowerment Group 101. We'll get back at you. We'll tap into you. Also, for donations, please, y'all, take the finance to upgrade the nation, man. Support your people. Support what you're hearing so we can do more work. I just had to pay for some more stuff so I could bring it to y'all last night. And I got it downloaded. I got to go through it, read it. And when I get it inside of me, I'm going to be on here spitting it to give it to you so you can use it for something. We have different episodes about different things. Sometimes we're going to nationality. We're going to civics. I teach people about how to get the credit people out of your business, people about to do real business formation so you get funded. We do all that. So go over to Instagram at Legal Empowerment Group. Check us out for your do-it-yourself kits and Legal Empowerment Group 101 if you want to schedule a consultation or something like that. We want to thank y'all again. Don't forget to go over to health.info. That's /E/A/L/T/H.info. And when I say slash, I mean going straight across, not in an angle. So I should say, So that's how that works, .info. Health, the word health, like healthcare, .info. And you got to put the dashes in between each word, and that's how it goes. Okay? And yeah, check us out. We got an NFT. You know, they're in the metaverse and all that. And you got the S-Gala, the Super Gallery's NFT token. Get in on that before we go major on that public and your super coin, and we're giving a bunch of them away for cheap. So when they do go live enough, it might be a year from now, it'll be two years from now, you pay $100, get you 10 million coins. All right, what's wrong with that? Yeah, you get the 10 million coins, man, and then you look up from now, some time come up, in 2 years from now, you be like, man, I'm glad I invested in that. Shoot, I came up. Things are changing in the world, man. There's all kinds of currencies out there. But yeah, man, once again, thank y'all for sliding through the morning drip. With Suleiman Bey on Block Talk Radio. I wish y'all peace and love. Slide through again. Come through. Keep it posted when you see it pop up. Link in and tell a friend. Peace and love.